If I was dressed in my best defenses, would you meet me for coffee? Annie DeFranco. Hi, this is Carla, and this short episode of There Might Be Cupcakes might not be for you. I know that seems like an odd and off-putting beginning, but bear with me. I'm going to explain why, and then I'm going to take the additional odd step of explaining what this episode is not. This episode is not going to be for everyone because it is going to be, factually and openly, about the sexual violence perpetrated upon me in 1991 by my, at the time, ex-boyfriend. The fact that I had to give serious thought about how to precisely word that sentence is one of the reasons this episode is not going to be for everyone. And that reason is that I was not raped in the, I hate to use this phrase, traditional sense. If you believe I must use softer language like sexually assaulted or unwanted touch or even molested, this episode may not be for you. If you don't believe that forced sexual contact without penile penetration is rape / sexual violence, and that's as bluntly as I can put it, this episode is not for you. This is not a political or feminist statement on my part. This is rather a result of arguing with myself over what really happened since 1991, and I've decided that what happened was violent enough to not be softened by the term sexual assault, because that's the way that term had been used with me and against me. It was sexual violence, perhaps even rape. See, I don't even remember all that happened. But that part comes later. But yeah, I don't remember. But either way, yeah, I played a lot of ugly games of linguistic, internal, and external tug-of-war over what I was allowed to call what happened to me in my own front yard and then in my own home. And if my just saying so bothers you, this episode's not for you. And with all that being said, this is not a political or feminist episode at all. If it will bother you that I'm not getting righteously angry about what I just said, throwing my verbal fists in the air, bringing feminism and the politics of the body and sexist laws and law enforcement into the discussion, much less a deep debate about current events, this episode may not be okay for you either. I'm no one's warrior. I'm just a 45-year-old who's using her podcast to have a long overdue conversation with her inner 19-year-old and inviting whoever wants or needs to listen to gather around the campfire while I hold the talking stick. Current events do drive the timing of this episode, that is true, and I'll explain. The gist of this is my horror at the public's and the press's response to the recent accusations against the comedian and actor Aziz Ansari. Disclaimer, I have no idea what he did or didn't do, nor do I have a stake in it. But I saw, amongst other things, it debated in our national press whether or not the alleged victim could be sexually victimized in his apartment versus her own apartment, as if location dictated personal agency. I also saw the very language used about me by a police officer. And I will explain the context. In 1991, in the 2018 Washington Post, looks like this little girl just had a bad date. And when I saw that dismissive, degrading sentence, very nearly repeated word for word, 27 years apart, I knew the someday of telling this story on the podcast became now. So finally, the last reason you may not want to listen to this episode. If you do not want to know the details of what happened to me. Because what I remember, I'm going to share. Not in lingering detail, but honestly. Okay, so, what this episode is not. A political or feminist advocacy episode, or a political episode at all. An episode about Aziz Ansari's guilt or innocence. An episode about the hashtag MeToo movement, or the Time's Up movement. Also, not graphic rehashing of details. Forthright retelling, but no more than you hear on the average true crime podcast episode. what this episode is about, what happened to me, and what was done to me in the autumn of 1991 as a victim of sexual crime, how I see the language of 1991 that was personally directed still reflected very clearly in journalistic and public language at the Aziz and Grace news story. I am over-explaining, perhaps because I'm nervous or just feeling vulnerable. So, hi, this is Carla, and welcome to episode 34 of There Might Be Cupcakes. This girl just had a bad date. We are so accustomed to disguising ourselves to others that in the end, we become disguised to ourselves. The Goldfinch, Donna Tartt. Okay, who we, my rapist and I, were first as a couple, briefly. We started dating in 1990, the spring of our senior year of high school. He was what I saw as protective then and see as controlling now. He broke up with me in the spring of 1991 when we were both at college, living in the same dorm. In the name of trying to remain friends and of concern for my mental health, I have depression and anxiety, and at that time I was hiding how bad it was. He continued to show up, hang out, hover. I own my own part in this. My best friend Joshua expressed concern over my ex-boyfriend's behavior. I heard him, but I was, I see now, deliberately playing chicken in a way. Plus, we were housed in the same co-ed dorm, my ex-boyfriend's room literally one floor directly below mine. I could have moved. I could have done a lot of things. I'm grossly simplifying 1990 and 1991, and I'm probably being unfair to both my ex-boyfriend and myself, but I don't have diaries from that period, and the before is not the story for today. Fall semester 1991, I moved into my first apartment 5 minutes off of campus. My moving into my apartment seemed to agitate my ex-boyfriend, stirring something within him, and he ramped up his attention quickly and intensely. It seemed to really push his buttons that I was out of his direct line of vision, and so he pushed right back. I was too naive and too tied up in internal knots to recognize the danger. He'd call me at my apartment just to let me know he knew what time I'd arrived home, or where I'd been, or that my best friend Joshua had just visited. Now, I knew about stalking. I intellectually knew. But I didn't process his behavior as such. It was the early 90s. Stalking wasn't as well known as it is now, and when I was there inside it all, and juggling my first home, and my first bills, and classes, and a 19-year-old's world, it was just one more thing happening to me. So, here we go. My very first boyfriend ever, Eric, and I were trying to rebuild a friendship, and one night, soon after I moved into my apartment, when the evenings were starting to become pleasantly cool, he called. Could he and some of the guys from the dorm come over? He had some Macintosh programs to share, and everyone wanted to see my new place. Cultural note, when Macs were new, sharing of cool finds was common. Even the guys at the computer store would trade floppies of nifty add-ons, freeware, and shareware with me when I came into shop. Okay, I may be stalling. So soon, my new home was filled with testosterone and happy noises as Eric and Joshua and other mutual guy friends draped over my furniture. Then a knock at the door. No, a pounding. I looked to the peephole to see it obscured and dark. "Who's there?" I called. And then, I do not know why, I went ahead and opened the door. I revealed the ex-boyfriend, with his thumb still over the peephole. He looked edgy, bouncing on the balls of his feet. He came in and awkwardly stood in my living room, obviously displeased with the apartment full of young men, guy friends. He leaned in close. "I need to talk to you, alone. Come outside with me." And I went. He did not stop walking as I expected, but instead he left the warm circle of the porch light and headed into the darkness. I followed. When he guided me out of view of the front-facing window, my bedroom, of my apartment, his energy just changed. He whirled on me, grabbed my arms, and yanked me to him, forcing his tongue into my mouth. He was so wiry and so strong, had always been so strong, and this movement almost knocked me off my feet. He took advantage, keeping me off balance as he continued to kiss me, to devour me, to bite, to consume. I froze. I could not move. I said no and stop. Every time the kissing stopped, but to no avail. He was inside his head, and in there we were lovers, and I still adored him and could not resist him. He embraced me as he continued to gnaw at me, and I could feel his hands as they moved from my arms to possessive fists at the base of my spine. Fists. He thrust me from him, grabbing my upper arms again, and gazed upon me as if we were reunited star-crossed lovers, whispering, "Oh God, I've missed you so much." He yanked our mouths back together, knocking my head back, squeezing and twisting the skin of my arms. I was still frozen, struggling to breathe and not to be consumed. He jolted me into finding my own movement again when I felt his hands now under my shirt, as they pulled my bra's cups out of the way, and I felt the evening's air and then his hands on my nipples. That's what stays with me. The shock of cool air on my previously covered breasts, followed by his pinching, possessive fingers. I don't remember how I broke his grip or how I got safely back upstairs to my apartment. The next thing I remember after that shock of cool air is opening my door and Joshua looking up at me from the daybed couch as I did so, and my running to his arms and lap, disheveled and dazed. I remember the feeling of my bra's cup still being out of place, tucked up under my breasts, and how raw my mouth and lips felt, and I remember absolutely nothing more about that night. The night ends for me when Joshua's arms closed around me in safety. If anyone ever asks you what panic is, now you can tell them. An emotional blank spot that leaves you feeling as if you've been sucking on a mouthful of pennies. Gerald's Game, Stephen King. The next morning, my ex-boyfriend called me. Without preamble or hello, he said, "I need to apologize for last night. I'm coming over." I was both a people pleaser and a deer in headlights. I had no context for what was happening to me. Not an excuse, just a description. So when he pounded on the door, I opened the door. I recall the rest of that day as a movie I once saw. Huge chunks are missing. The mechanics of what occurred are lost to time. I know he was there all day because a friend asked me to videotape a Star Trek marathon that day, and I had started the 6-hour tape just before the phone call. When everything was all over, the videotape had stopped recording. I remember my ex-boyfriend's kneeling before me and pinning my wrist up under his arms and then tickling me until I cried, stopping to watch me to recover my breath, and then starting again, not stopping till I actually choked and spit bile. I remember his hands on my nipples again. I remember his bending over me. I'm laying down on the daybed couch, and he has a forearm across my throat, and he's looming over me. I could see objects on the pass-through shelf to my kitchen. The phone, the answer machine, a candle. I don't know why that's important, but it is. I can see the pass-through shelf, and through it, the cabinets over the stove, and the ceiling, and his shoulder, and the objects on the shelf. That just feels really important. And I remember later, his telling me that he needed to teach me how to defend myself. He really said that. and then saying he would show me how to get out of a chokehold, he again placed his forearm against my throat, this time from behind. I heard myself stop breathing, like it was the loudest sound in the world being switched off. I heard myself stop breathing, and I looked helplessly down the hallway to my bedroom as my vision darkened and tunneled and then whitened around the edges. I remember that moment of losing my air and thinking so calmly that this would be the last sight I would see. This is how I would die. It would end like this, with me watching my bedroom disappear into a shrinking tunnel of light and dark. The movie jumps to later, and I'm alone, crumpled in that last spot at the foot of the hallway, and everything hurts or feels rubbed and raw. I don't know what else happened other than the above stated moments. I just don't. It won't come back. I've tried. I sat in my apartment with a police officer. I don't remember when. I think the Monday evening after that weekend, or maybe later, I admit. A rookie was assigned to take my statement, and he was obviously uncomfortable. I will never forget, as he was fumbling to explain that there wasn't physical evidence to make a charge, and that at that time, there wasn't a North Carolina law that covered what had happened to me. There is now. It's called sexual battery, but there wasn't at the time. But as he was trying to explain, his radio squawked. His partner had stepped out to greet a third officer as she arrived, the obligatory female officer, and his partner had accidentally, I'll assume, pushed the talk button on his radio as she inquired about the situation. He answered, "Looks like this little girl just had a bad date. We'll be out of here in a minute." Looks like this little girl just had a bad date. Yes, actually those very words, they are seared into my brain. Looks like this little girl just had a bad date. I looked up across my tiny dining table that I had been so proud to pick out at the store at the officer in my home as a flush crept up his cheeks and he groped for the words to speak, and I nodded. "You can go now. I understand." He went quickly. And then the phone call started. My ex-boyfriend would call and compliment my pajamas. Even though I had my blinds closed, he seemed to know what I was doing. I took to sleeping in the living room, away from the front window, feeling safer on the day bed on which I had been attacked than in my own bed. He would call and tell me what I'd done that day. To get myself out of my own head, I had pledged a co-ed fraternity, and pledge meetings and business meetings were on campus at night. My ex-boyfriend followed me and made no show of hiding or creeping. I'd pull out of my apartment complex, and there would be his car behind mine. He'd smile at me through the windshield as if we were playing a childhood game. And I'd find him once again behind me on the way home. Realize stalking and, as I said, sexual battery were not against the law in North Carolina in 1991. Plus, he had not done any physical damage, even choking me, that showed on my body. And that was paramount for rape cases in 1991. But when the stalking escalated, I flailed about for any help that might be available and found out I had one outlet: student court. So I filed an official complaint about the assault. For the hearing, I had to sit at a very small conference table with my student representative, my ex-boyfriend, his student representative, and the student members and faculty members of our college student court, and go over everything I have just told you. A small conference table in a very small room. After a debate, the court suspended him for one semester. That's it. Before that one relief I received, I had to insist to my student representative that my case was student court worthy, and I had to have the Wonderland worthy conversation wherein he asked me to leave the forced tickling part out because it didn't make sense / took away from the story. I don't remember his exact words. He said it was weird and it weakened my story. I felt completely assaulted again as this man, this fellow student, told me something I suffered wasn't suffering and asked me to belittle my experience in order to make his job easier and make him more comfortable. So, what does any of this have to do with current events, specifically Grace's accusations against Aziz Ansari? Because I read what I perceived as violent accusations. She claimed he repeatedly tried to jam his fingers down her throat, and then read this sentence in a January 15th Washington Post article by reporter Sunny Bunch. It is about a date that went badly, one that did not live up to the expectations of the woman involved. It looks like this girl had a bad date. 27 years later. I'm going to read that again. Quote, it is about a date that went badly, one that did not live up to the expectations of the woman involved. Unquote. It looks like this girl had a bad date. Even if she be not harmed, her heart may fail her in so much and so many horror, and hereafter she may suffer, both in waking from her nerves and in sleep from her dreams. Dracula, Bram Stoker. So, how does this sexual violence and stalking affect me today? On the average day, I'm okay. It does not come to mind. I will spare you the difficult details about how it's affected me throughout the years, because that's not what truly this episode's about. But whenever I suffer some type of trauma, even today, no matter the context of that trauma, I have PTSD dreams. Yes, even today. That's why it so stopped me in my tracks when a reporter today used that dismissive language of 27 years ago. Because an unchargeable offense haunts my nightmares every time I suffer some sort of loss or trauma, now decades into my adulthood. If you think about me, the next time your first reaction is to minimize someone else's experience, which is a human response, and we all do it, including myself, then all the hard emotional work I put into this episode was worth it. So, all I can say is I hope you understood why I did this. I hope you get it. If you want to reach out with questions or comments, keep it kind, please. Or your own stories. You may email me at carla@theremightbecupcakes.com. It's a private email, only I have access. Of course, you may speak to me in front of a group in the podcast's private Facebook group. The post will not show up on your Facebook feed. Thank you for listening. You honor me by doing so. This is my first time telling my story to strangers since Survivors Group Support in 1993. In graduate school, and I have found cupcakes by doing so. Please do some small act of self-care after completing this episode. Hearing a victim's story can have unexpected effects upon the listener, so be extra kind to yourself. If you want more information about the nature of sexual violence, its definitions, or the laws in your American state, please click on the RAIN links in the show notes. If you yourself need help, please click on the designated RAIN link for the National Sexual Assault Hotline in the show notes. The hotline is available as a telephone chat or an online chat. The link is also shown in this episode's image. Again, thank you. I am surprised how short this episode is and how monumental a story of my life can be told in so quickly a time, like capturing lightning in a small jar. Maybe now it's less powerful. From lightning to lightning bugs. Thank you.